Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast. Mark Schanowski joined, as usual, by Kendall Gill and Will Perdue. And guys, the trip to Cleveland, we figured, could be a rough one, but the Bulls hung in there, actually had the lead at halftime. Their offense looked great, but then the Cavs found a way to take Lauri Markkanen out a bit in the second half. What did you think overall, guys?
Well, you know, I thought that that they came out and played really well in the first half. They didn't have any fear factor in particular. Lauri Markkanen, Kay Felder didn't. You know, Jerian Grant played better than I thought that he would. And of course, Justin Holiday continued with the green light that he has, scoring 25 points. But we all know that you never bet on the horse that gets out of the gate first. And, you know, the experience of the Cavaliers caught up to him. But I was really pleased with the Bulls' effort because, look, they could have come in here and just laid down, you know, and just been beaten and, you know, crucified by the Cleveland Cavaliers. But they didn't do that.
I especially to – you know, second on the effort aspect. Even in that second half when it looked like that Cleveland had kind of settled down, gotten the lead, and started to separate themselves, the Bulls didn't give up. I mean, the effort was still there. You know, they made some mistakes, but a lot of those mistakes are because of youth and the lack of depth. Mm-hmm. But the one thing you're seeing is guys are getting experience. They're getting an opportunity to play. And Fred is getting an opportunity to see some guys in this type of environment so that when the team does get healthy, Zach LaVine, Dunn, Nico, Portis, he'll have a better idea of a possible rotation as the season moves forward.
Well, this season's all about trying to find guys that are going to be part of the foundation going forward. Obviously, you make a trade of a top 15 player in Jimmy Butler with the Timberwolves, you want to make sure you get value back. And right now, we've seen in the first three games that Lauri Markkanen has a lot of potential as a stretch four, a 7-foot, 20-year-old who can knock down threes and also can take the ball to the basket. Haven't seen Zach LaVine or Chris Dunn yet, but Dunn could be back as early as Thursday. LaVine is right around the corner as well. I know that during the halftime show, I believe it was Kendall who compared him to Dirk Nowitzki, which some fans out there might look at as sacrilege. Why do you feel so strongly about the kid three games in, KG?
Well, because he's 7 foot tall and he has the ability to make plays without shooting a three-point shot. And to me, at this age, he puts the ball on the floor better than Dirk Nowitzki did at this point in his career. And his stroke is if you look at it, it's reminiscent of Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, when he gets his feet set quickly, he prepares to shoot before he gets the basketball. He's not afraid, and the blonde hair is a dead giveaway, guys. And I mean, you know, listen, if he grows his hair out a little bit more, you know, you may mistake him for a Dirk Nowitzki.
And the one thing we didn't know about him when the draft, you always hear the word potential, but I've been impressed with his knowledge of the game. When I say knowledge of the game, I don't mean when you ask him a question, but how he adapts as he plays. And the first thing is going back to his shot. I mean, he does all – and when I work with kids, I always talk about get all your work done early. Hands up, you know, get your feet in the right place. You see some people that do a lot of work after they catch the basketball. And it's almost like they have to wind up to get their feet set. This kid's already got his feet set. He's got his hands in the right place. Everybody's like, well, quick release because he gets all the work done early. So obviously somebody's taught him that, and he's worked on that in his game. Early on in the preseason, you know, we know that he's not used to the physicality of the NBA game. He shot a lot of perimeter jump shots. As the regular season started against Toronto when he had bigger players on him, you know, they would overextend, and we saw him put the ball on the deck and shoot that mid-range jump shot. Now he's gone from a position where he's shooting the mid-range jump shot to where he's attacking the rim, and you actually saw him in this game against Cleveland get an offensive rebound and get a put-back dunk. So he's just continually expanding his game with every game that he plays.
He's been really good, and I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far. But to play devil's advocate, you know, he had 17 points in the first half against the Cavs. They came out in the third quarter. They were sending hard double teams at him off screen roll action and really took him out of the game. So this is something the kid's going to have to adjust to, and the coaching staff is going to have to adjust to in terms of running different actions to get him the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's a learning process. I watched Keith Van Horn go through the same exact thing. Came in as a rookie. Highly touted as the second pick in the draft. And he had the same skill set as Markkanen. You know, he could shoot the three-point shot. He could put the ball on the floor. And he used to do this to teams in the first half as well. You know, and then they would come back, make a defensive adjustment to him. But the only thing about Keith Van Horn, he was able to make the adjustment as a rookie sooner than most rookies can make it. You know, he was able to fight off a double team. He was able to take guys down to the post. And that's something that Laurie needs to learn, which I think he will sooner rather than later.
And let's look at the bigger picture here. Remember in the preseason, what was everybody talking about? Smith Jr. down in Dallas. Oh, man, if
right.
The Bulls could have got him. I think that's the season starts, so I haven't heard his name mentioned around here.
Yeah.
But we talk about the Bulls made a decision for a rebuild. So like Marcus talked about, Dunn hasn't played yet because of injury. Zach LaVine hasn't played yet because of injury. And we talked about for this rebuild to really be effective, they're going to have to hit home runs in the draft. Mm-hmm. I know it's early and it's a small body of work, but it looks like the Bulls have definitely had a home run with marketing. The question is now, where does the front office go from here?
Smith Jr., it's interesting. I don't know if you guys saw this clip yesterday, but he tried to dunk the ball.
Yeah,
Draymond
saw that.
Green.
Yeah.
And Draymond Green said, "You will never, ever dunk the ball over me." So he's getting indoctrination. And, of course, he's playing the point guard position with the Mavericks, and that's probably a tougher thing for a rookie to have to adjust to than being a shooter like Markkanen is. But that's going to be a debate that's going to go on for the next 3 years and maybe for their entire careers is, did the Bulls get the right guy? The early return suggests, especially with their hope that Dunn and LaVine is going to eventually be their starting backcourt, that they got another starter that they can count on in Markkanen.
I think so. But now here's where, we've had these conversations in the green room about, you know, who's the pressure on this year, the players or the coaches? As you guys just alluded to, 17 points in the first half, the Cavs make the necessary defensive adjustments. He's a rookie. He's not sure what to do, only scores two in the second half. Well, to me, that's the responsibility now of the coaching staff. We're going to sit down. We're going to watch some film. We're going to start working on some things. So when that happens again, we're going to put you in a position, A, to succeed, but B, you're going to know what to do. You don't necessarily have to come over and set the screen. You can break the play. You know, sometimes, and maybe not so much with Kendall, but I remember when I first came in the league, it's almost sudden like, you know, in this case, when you're running the triangle, it's almost like the old, like you're learning how to dance. You got the footsteps on the floor. You're doing exactly what you're told, and you're not necessarily reading the defense. You're just running the play. But I think with more experience, more time in the film room, he'll be in a position where, you know, we've seen how quickly he's changed things over the first three games. If that continues to happen, when teams make that necessary adjustment, he'll know how to react in the future.
Kendall, I know you want to talk about your guy, Kay Felder. I
mean, Kay Felder, yeah.
You mentioned Jaren Grant, who had a decent game statistically, mm-hmm. but still struggles at times with the point guard responsibilities. He's more of a scoring point guard. But Felder, when he comes in, he's able to get in the paint. He mm-hmm. had a couple of turnovers where he tried to throw alley-oops the guys weren't ready for.
Yeah.
But he can provide that instant offense off the bench, and he is a point guard. I mean, that's his DNA.
He's a point guard. He led the nation in assists when he was in college one season. And he can score. Sometimes Jaren Grant, he doesn't make the right point guard decisions when they need to be made. Now he's a capable scorer, but I think he's more of a two guard than a one, and he's really too small physically to be a two guard. But you take Kay Felder, he comes in today, has 13 first half points. I think Fred maybe forgot about him a little bit in the second half, but you know, like as you mentioned earlier, made some passes where guys put guys in positions. In position to score, but they just couldn't do it. And they're not used to playing with him yet. And he's still feeling his way through the offense, but I really like what I see in him. He can come off and knock down three-point shots, knock down mid-range shots, and he can get to the basket, and he can find open guys. So, you know, when Dunn comes back.
Which could be as early as Thursday.
Which could be as early as Thursday. whoever is playing that backup position, they better work their butt off, because this guy, Kay Felder, I think is going to put pressure on everybody to be the second point guard off of the bench.
And this will be an interesting position for Fred Hoiberg,
mm-hmm.
because of the fact of, we talked about, you know, Felder, I think we'll all three agree, has deserved more playing time.
Yes, he has.
Jerian Grant, at times, has played well. If you go back and you look at the numbers tonight, I mean, he was, quite honestly, from a statistical standpoint, you know, he was close to a triple-double. 12 points, 10 assists, 6 rebounds. But he still, as you've talked about, struggles at times to be a point guard.
A point guard, yeah.
And right now, that's what the Bulls are looking for. So I think Fred Hoiberg's in kind of a quandary about, what do I do here? Because from a point guard standpoint, it seems like Felder fits the bill more than Jerian Grant. But at the same time, as you ask yourself, okay, now, because everybody has an opportunity, is Fred in the position where he's truly making the decisions? And those guys that practice well, play well, are they the ones that are going to truly earn the minutes? Because you talked about, even through the game, you mentioned, where's Felder in the second half? What's going on here? Now, I will attest to, every coach has said, I kind of forgot the guy was down there.
Yeah, but sometimes coaches do. I mean, it's easy to.
But that's also the responsibility of the one assistant of the assistants, getting the coach's ear and be like, hey, remember that guy? Remember what he did in the first half?
Join Mark Schanowski and Dan Jiggins for Bears Huddle, presented by Verizon. Preview the next opponent with in-depth player matchups for the upcoming game. Plus, hear from offensive coordinator Dow Loggins every Wednesday at 4:30 on NBC Sports Chicago.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast. Mark Schanowski, Will Perdue, and Kendall Gill with you. Let's look ahead to the upcoming two-game homestand. And if you circle a game that the Bulls should win, it would be the Atlanta Hawks.
Let's
limping
go.
Into the United Center there on Thursday. Go. Their best player, Dennis Schroeder, has been out with an ankle injury. They traded Dwight Howard to Charlotte. Paul Millsap left, went to the Denver Nuggets as a free agent. There is not a lot of talent on the roster. I would say that Atlanta, on paper, may look worse than what the Bulls roster is when the Bulls have all their guys. Is this a game that they should get, Ken?
This is definitely a game they should get, especially with Felder playing well, with Markkanen now establishing himself as a consistent offensive threat, and Robin Lopez with veteran experience. He should be able to take advantage of whoever they put on him down in the post. So this is one all of those guys feel that they should get.
And it'll be interesting to see, as this will be the first game that this team goes in, I would think, as the favorite.
They should be, yeah.
So how do they respond? I mean, it's not necessarily adversity, but Toronto, San Antonio, Cleveland, you really didn't expect them to beat them.
No.
You expected to see the effort, which we have seen. You've seen this team, in my opinion, get better over the three games, but you didn't really think they had a chance to win. This is a game that not only do you think they have a chance to win, because at home, and what we've seen, they should win the game. So how do they handle the so-called pressure of being a favorite going into the game?
Yeah, when I was on losing teams, like these two teams are, you know, I always had the mindset, and my team always had the mindset of, okay, we got to win this game because we're not the worst of the worst. Okay, this should be a game that we win, and this is the same way these guys have to look at the Atlanta Hawks. They cannot let these guys come in here and beat them, especially with Schroeder out, and that's their best player.
Yeah, people talk about teams going into tank mode or rebuild, whatever you want to call it. How about Mike Budenholzer? He came from San Antonio where he knew nothing but winning. The Hawks were called Spurs East for a while with their freedom of movement and share the wealth. They had four guys make the All-Star team that one year. And then Budenholzer, because they didn't advance in the playoffs, they took away his president of basketball operations title. He's just the coach now. They bring in a new GM. They clean house. And this is a team that has very little talent. They drafted John Collins, a high flyer from Wake Forest in the first round, a power forward who the Bulls will see Thursday night. He's a pretty good player. As we mentioned, Schroeder's okay. They have Kent Bazemore, but other than that, cupboard's pretty bare. There's a lot of teams in the East that look pretty dreadful. That includes the New York Knicks, who are already having some signs of infighting. Brooklyn Nets lost Jeremy Lin, their point guard for the season. There's a lot of bad teams in the East. A
lot of bad teams, and that's exactly why LeBron James will not go to Los Angeles Lakers, to the Los Angeles Lakers, and start a new career path. Because, I mean, it's easy now in the East. There's nobody that can possibly compete with the Cleveland Cavaliers, with the exception, in my opinion, of the Milwaukee Bucks. If Giannis Antetokounmpo continues to play well, and Jabari Parker plays well. But, you know, also the Washington Wizards, too. But I think they need to shore up their bench a little bit in Boston if they get Hayward back. But, you know, like you said, Mark, there are a lot of bad teams, which means that a lot of those top five draft picks will be playing in the East.
Yeah,
In the Eastern Conference.
So there could be a shift in the balance of power.
There could be a shift in the balance of power in about 3 or 4
years. Kendall mentioned Giannis. I mean, his early season has been amazing. He scored 30 points or more in every start so far. The Bucks are off to a 3-1 start. He could be a legitimate MVP candidate if Milwaukee gets to, let's say, 50 wins on the year.
I don't see why not. I mean, I think it again, if the vote was taken now, I think everybody would vote for him as the MVP. He's already surpassed expectations as far as taking what he's done previously in the previous seasons and gotten better each year. And then we talk about getting better by baby steps. It almost seems like he's gotten better by leaps and bounds over last season. I'm not sure anybody saw this coming. But I'm really looking forward to when the Bulls play Milwaukee so we can see this guy up close and personal.
What do you guys think is going on at Golden State? They're 2-2. Steph Curry throws his mouthpiece towards an official. Kevin Durant gets ejected from that same game. Do you think it's going to be tough for them, after all the success they've had over the last 3 years, to keep that drive, that motivation, during a long regular season?
And maybe Will can speak to this, because I've never been on a team on that level. But what I see is boredom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah, I agree.
You know, that's what I see. And the guys are like, man, I don't want to even go through regular season. I want to just get to the playoffs.
And, you know, and it's interesting you say that, because right now, as we're taping this podcast, the post game, the Cleveland Cavaliers are like, man, we get everybody's best game every night.
Mm-hmm.
And hypothetically speaking, let's say the Bulls go out and lay an egg against the Hawks. The Cavs are watching that, and they're like, come on, man, that's not the team that played us
right.
on Tuesday night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing as with Golden State's going through. But, you know, I remember – was it our third championship when we were the sixth seed? We didn't necessarily play that well in the regular season, and a lot of people didn't necessarily consider us.
I don't think you guys ever fell that far.
But it was just we didn't have the regular season that everybody anticipated, but yet we were able to ramp it up and do what we did in the play and win a championship in the playoffs. But it's one thing that Steve Kerr had mentioned that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about is just the hangover from China. As far as, you know, he's talking about his players are talking about their fatigue. He's talked about they looked out of shape. So, you know, I think we got to give them some time to kind of acclimate themselves and see what happens. I tell you the one thing they're not afraid to do is talk a lot of trash. And then all of a sudden there's that guy Jordan Bell who the Bulls drafted and then sold to the Golden State Warriors. He's looked pretty good as a young fella.
Yeah, and he raised a lot of controversy where he threw the ball off the board late in the blowout and dunked it. You could see the people on the Golden State Warriors bench just gasping,
right.
Like, oh, my God, what did he just do? And Steve Kerr tried to apologize to Rick Carlisle, and Carlisle just walked right past him. He wasn't going to hear anything of that because Carlisle's kind of a throwback coach, wants to play the game the right way. And, you know, the thing about this whole Jordan Bell thing is, and I wasn't even going to get into this, but you brought him up. People are thinking, like, the Bulls gave up on this guy who they could have had as part of their rebuild. He wasn't even on their draft board. It wasn't like they drafted him and then sold him. That was prearranged. Golden State wanted Bell. Mm-hmm. They offered to pay the freight to get the second-round pick. It's not like the Bulls drafted Bell with the idea we're going to keep him, and then they moved him along. He was not a guy that they really liked that much.
And let's make this very clear. If you put Bell on any other team, he's not the same player.
He's got to be on a great team to really be effective.
Right.
Because I remember doing the NCAA tournament in Kansas City when Oregon was there. And everybody was like, oh, my God, this guy's going to be a great professional. I'm like,
no.
He can't score.
No offensive game.
He's a great defender, an outstanding shot blocker for a guy that's 6'8".
He was Ben Wallace in college.
That's what I was going to say. He's Ben Wallace.
You're exactly right. But he has to be on a specific team.
Sure.
To be a good NBA player.
Surrounded by four great offensive players like he will be whenever he takes the floor with
exactly
the Warriors.
Which is exactly what Ben Wallace was. And you know, when the Bulls signed Ben Wallace years ago, and everybody was like, oh, my God. I was like, what are you guys talking about? He was surrounded by four Hall of Fame caliber players. And when he came here, you saw exactly what Ben Wallace was, you know.
But let's also make it very clear. We've said that the Bulls have a direction. And when that second round pick came up, whether they want to admit it or not, there seemed to be a correlation between Rondo's buyout and what they sold that pick for.
You know what? You know what happened? They were going to take Semi Ojeleye, who was taken right in front of them at 37 by the Celtics. They said on the record that they had three or four wing guys they liked, and they were all off the board. They were going to take Ojeleye. He was gone. Jordan Bell came up next. They had a standing offer from the Warriors to buy the pick, and they said, all right, you got it. It's simple as that.
But that's, you know, that's a plan A and a plan B. So, and here's the other thing people were talking about. Okay, let's say they pick Jordan Bell. Nico and Bobby don't have a fight, and this hurts Markkanen's playing time.
And you paid Felicio a fortune, so he's not playing back
right.
in center there.
So, and also,
hey, you know, talking about Oregon, you know, the guy they could have taken is Dylan Brooks. He's off to a nice start.
Yeah.
Well, you had, you know, again, let's just give Mark Schanowski credit. You did your homework, and you did a story before the draft about players that have value in that second round.
Dwayne Bacon, yeah, starting
Brooks,
for the Hornets.
Guys you talked about that the Bulls could have picked that are having an immediate impact in the league.
It's going to be interesting. You know, rebuild is never clean. There's going to be bumps along the way. There's going to be some surprises. We're really happy with what we've seen from Lauri Markkanen in the first three games. Obviously, Justin Holliday's played well, getting a little bump from Kay Felder, but they're going to have to hit in the draft. They're going to have to hit for the next couple of years for this all to pan out.
Well, they really are, but I think that there's a lot of even though they've lost the games, there's been a lot of encouraging signs. A lot of the mistakes, I feel, are made because of youth and a lack of experience with the younger guys. And we continue to talk about, you know, let's see where this team is after 10 games and let us see where they are after 30 games. But let's also compare now to where they are in April when you hit those last 10 games of the season.
Yeah, and you know, I really like it. If you're going to break a team up and blow it up, I like the position that the Bulls are in because they got a capable player, a guy that's going to really be able to help them out in marketing. And then when Zach LaVine gets back, if Chris Dunn comes back and plays the way that we anticipate him playing, you know, I like the position that the Bulls are in, especially if they get a top five draft pick.
Listen, this is reaching for the stars, but the World Series is a perfect example. The Houston Astros 4 years ago lost 111 games.
Mm-hmm.
This year they won 101. And they're in the World Series.
Right.
And that Sports Illustrated prediction might come true. That was made years ago. That your 2017 World Series champions, the Houston Astros.
I saw that, yeah.
Pretty amazing. Well, hopefully the Bulls will get some luck along the way. They're going to need it in the draft. Hopefully make some trades that bring in additional picks that can turn into guys that will be part of this foundation going forward. Thank you so much for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast. Remember, a new feature at NBC Sports Chicago this year, we're going to be doing pre- and post-game coverage for every game, all 82 games, even the ones that are televised over on WGN. So coming up on Thursday, that's a WGN broadcast of the Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks. But Kendall and I are going to be at the United Center for pregame live at 6:30. And then after the game, flip over to NBC Sports Chicago. We'll bring you Fred Hoiberg's news conference, locker room player reaction on Bulls postgame live. And as always, you can find all of our podcasts at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcasts. We're also available at Apple Podcasts. We hope you'll listen and subscribe. Keep your chin up. There are better days ahead.